Blog Talk Radio. Where not just women are in danger, but all marginalized people. Where being uniquely different right now might truly be considered a crime. It seems as though we had all slipped into a false sense of comfort, that justice would prevail and that good would win in the end. Well, good did not win this election, but good will win in the end. So what today means is that we are far from the end. Today marks the beginning of our story. The revolution starts here. The fight for the right to be free, to be who we are, to be equal. Let's march together through this darkness, and with each step, know that we are not afraid. That we are not alone. That we will not back down. That there is power in our unity, and that no opposing force stands a chance in the face of true solidarity. And to our detractors that insist that this march will never add up to anything.
Austin Red here with Friday Java, a weekly magazine of political theory, polling, and commentary. It is part of the history called people that make up this fascinating journey. We are part of the Obama Network. For that, we make no apologies. What we pledge to do is give you the facts on a bridge to history, what body politics is, the most up-to-date theories of political science and psychology. Stay tuned for this incredible ride. Austin Red, peace out.
From WBRN Radio and on the Boston Red Network. We are now in our 11th year on the 23rd of January. We officially started on many of these networks, internet radio. Prior to that, we were on radio, actual radio, and it was also internet radio with our late partner, Jerry Pippin. We always remember Jerry. He died in 2015. Nonetheless, this is Friday Java on the 25th of January 2019. More now than 4,000 episodes or programs onto the Boston Red Network, Bannon, Numbers Man, the Open Source Report, BR on the World, etc. And all about sports, our new, and you don't see much of it, but you'll see more of it this year in 2019. The top story today, we'll have the people later, incidentally, from the University of Virginia. That's Charlottesville, Virginia. Our we always honor Heber Heyer, who was killed there by white supremacists. Nonetheless, the top story today, one of DJ Trump's long-serving running buddies and a right-wing type named Roger Stone. He's been indicted and arrested by the FBI, the special prosecutor. This is from the Washington Post. Stone was charged with 7 counts, including 1 count of obstruction of an official proceeding, 5 counts of false statements, and 1 count of witness tampering, according to the special prosecutor's office. With Stone's indictment, the special prosecutor Mueller has struck deep inside Trump's inner circle, charging a longstanding friend of the president's and one of the first people to promote Trump for the White House. Well, I was there too. Stone is 66, who had been friends with Trump for 30 years, served briefly as a formal advisor to his presidential campaign. That was in 2015. And remain in contact with him. The GOP operative has been a key force in the special focus of the special counsel's office on investigating whether Trump's orbit conspired with the Russian Federation. Don't count very much on that one. But during the race, Stone publicly cheered on the group WikiLeaks as it released hacky emails that embarrassed the nominee, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Stone also claimed before the election that he was in contact, and he lied about that with Julian Assange, whom he called my hero. But you have to separate from Stone what was just sheer bravado, boastering, and flummery. In July, a grand jury indicted 12 officials, military officials of the Russian Federation, on charges that they orchestrated hacks and distributed pilfered documents to WikiLeaks and other sites. And, of course, the documents went to WikiLeaks. Ended up going to a number of so-called Western media outlets. Stone acknowledged exchanging what he characterized as benign messages with Glucifer 2, Twitter persona that the U.S. intelligence agent said was a front. And this is where it's very, very tricky. It was never confirmed that they were a front for the Russian military. They could have been a front for any spying operation, including U.S. intelligence agencies. But Stone repeatedly denying the contacts with Russia or WikiLeaks. He said he had no advance knowledge of what material WikiLeaks held, adding that predictions he made about the group's plans were based on public comments by Julian Assange, and no doubt about that. The investigation has devolved into gotcha word games, perjury traps, trumped up processes. That's what he told the Washington Post last year. And then what he's singing is this year, but they've got him. During the campaign, Stone privately told associates that he was in contact with Julian Assange, and if he was, they've got it. In November 2016, email to Trump, then chief strategist, that was Steve Bannon, the fascist, Stone implied that he had information about the group's plans. How much of that you could trust is not there. Stone indictment, special prosecutor's investigation now leads to charges against 34 people. Guilty pleas by six associates of DJ Trump, including the former campaign manager Paul Manafort, deputy campaign manager Rick Gates, former national security advisor Mike Overflynn, who was the general, and former Trump attorney Michael Cohen. And George Papadopoulos, it wasn't a campaign type. None of the previous charges include allegations that Trump's associates conspired with the Russian Federation to interfere in elections. One of the main thrusts there, DJ Trump has denied he's been involved since he advised the Republicans and Libertarian candidates, including Ronald Reagan. This is... Stone got his start working for Tricky Dick in 1972. He advised Ronald Reagan, Bob Dole, Gary Johnson. He's a libertarian, former governor of New Mexico. Helped reshape Washington lobbying, founding a successful firm in the 80s with Manafort that represented top companies in foreign governments. Influenced peddler was what Stone was, and a promoter. I'll tell you one thing he never talked about is Russia, Russian influence, as Stone said in an interview last year. Stone told the Washington Post that he remained in contact with Trump from time to time. Well, I doubt very seriously if DJ Trump would tell old Roger Stone very much. But the bottom line on Stone, he's a promoter. What Stone knows, being in that orbit, the special prosecutor will get some of those details out of him. There's no doubt about that. As the government shut down, and now the press has moved from a partial shutdown, we did not use the word partial shutdown except in the very, very early days, just to explain to people what was going on, what the machinations were. And this has to do not with DJ Trump, but how the Congress and all spending bills originate by the Constitution in the House of Representatives when the Republicans controlled it. That was how they set up funding for government. How the government funding for what they call fiscal years. It usually end in September, most do, but these are a little bit different. When you look at the scope of this, there's over 80,000 people. There are, 40,000 military, well, not only military, but so-called independent contractors. These are people that work primarily for contracting companies like Booz Allen, et cetera, across the board, and smaller operations, and there's a few probably that work on their own to subcontract with one of the contractors. Anyway, nonetheless, these people are not getting paid. Old Wilbur Ross at the Commerce, another millionaire type, almost 80 years old, he maybe is 80 years old, suggested that workers follow a loan with the credit union. Evidently, I guess somebody discovered the credit union, his particular credit union at the department's credit union, not his, charges 9% interest. I didn't know that. Most credit unions are much cheaper on loans. No doubt some people have taken out loans. Some other banking concerns, enterprises, have offered accounts to government workers and advanced them $500 in the accounts. That's more to spur business. Remember, many, many years ago, a lot of these internet, what you call internet banks at the time, would put $25, $30 in your account. But again, when you're at a bank or whatever instrument, financial instrument, advertising, that's just a cheaper way, actually, of getting customers. And in this case, keeping government workers in their sphere is why they are giving out these loans. And other places are giving free meals, free coffee, free donuts, free this, free this. Buy one pizza, get one free. Food banks are involved giving out food to government workers. It's a tragedy. And there are various military-type stuff, like some elements, evidently the Coast Guard, are not being paid. I mean, you have some very, very strange situation going on here. You have 40,000, how many thousand IRS workers that were called back in, but they're not getting paid. There's going to be a catastrophe there because we are moving now towards the end of the month. And the for people that get W-2s, these W-2s will start coming out. And as they start appearing on the scene, workers will start filing their tax returns. And there will be the IRS helpline. Now, there will be virtually nobody there to do that. Perhaps the automated type situations will be there. There's going to be nothing but confusion and processing. And I remember when we at Cranston went into the, we talked about this before, I'll make it very brief, went into the, we were doing a tax preparation also. And what was it at the time? It was in the second year. The first year was more of a trial year of electronic transmitted returns. And now everybody does that, and you can get it done actually free. And on the new tax law, higher standard deduction, but most people between, $40,000, $50,000 can just simply file their returns because they will not have the type of deductions to even worry about it. Just take the standard and forget it. But nonetheless, there's a lot of confusion will be there, and as the confusion sets in, one of the problems with any shutdown is that it's easy to shut down the government. It's harder to start it back up, and the longer it lasts, the more damage it does. And you can imagine some of these workers have missed at least one paycheck, going towards two paychecks. And some of these people live, it's not a callous comment, but the reality is paycheck to paycheck. Now, I'm not talking about necessarily the contract cleaners and people making under $20 an hour. A lot of these people make much, much more than $20 an hour. They are more the $30 to $50 an hour types. But because of the way that window is set up, once a worker gets behind in paying, you know, basic things like a rent, mortgages, the late fees coming in, even if they waive the late fees, you are maybe a month behind. So you're paying, as soon as the government reopens, you're paying your rent immediately, then you start catching up the back months or the back payments or whatever. And that puts a further strain. So in other words, you're talking about workers, if they reopen tomorrow, would take February and March and maybe April to pull back to where they were paying off all these charges and loans that they've had. Now, other workers have been fortunate enough to go to work for Uber and various other companies, find additional work at fast food restaurants, you name it. They've had to find a work there while they're furloughed. Many are now on unemployment, so that is a and should have been on before. Now, basically, as I understand it, that varies a little bit from state to state, but basically, I think it's still a week to, in many states, it's still a week to week operation. So you the first week of that furlough or second week of that furlough, they don't get paid for the first week, but they get paid for the second or the third. So thus, the furloughed people, wherever they are, can now collect unemployment. Now, that's a little bit different if they are actually back working again. Now, how that's worked out would depend, obviously, on the state, because they're not getting paid. They are working. But those that are not working, can get unemployment, and that will basically pay their mortgage or whatever, some essentials, until they get actually full paychecks, and most of them will get retroactive pay back. So in other words, a lot of machinations are going on there. Well, we'll leave the shutdown now and the damage that it's causing. Incidentally, we couldn't get our data set of figures from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, some that we needed to work with, but people that do economic analysis the same. Nonetheless, we'll have a numbers man program. We have some stats from the International Monetary Fund. We're also covering the World Economic Forum. We have several programs or edited programs that we've recorded from the first day on. We'll be putting those up on a number of our channels, where we'd be on the Numbers Man channel, the Boston Red channel, or BR on the World. We'll get all that little programming note there. Now, we shift to Venezuela. Evidently, in Venezuela, we have a program coming up there called The Clown. You have a young fella, younger person. He's 35 years old. He declared himself president, sworn himself in. That's never been done before. And all of these capitalist operations, the U.S., Canada, I think even the Conservative Party in the U.K. and several others, that fascist that's in Brazil there, and several other lackeys and what have you, have recognized that government, or you want to call it shadow government. And in Washington, the Trump administration, of course, they've already recognized it, are figuring ways to seize money that would go to the Venezuelan government and funnel it through this character that has taken over. And at the same time, provocateurs that went into working class neighborhoods / poor neighborhoods and are causing problems. They're burning things, shooting at police officers, etc. Normally, the demonstrations in the so-called middle-class areas is where all the bad actors concentrate. But this time, it's pure sabotage following the old CIA book. And there was also the assassination attempt on President Munoz in August, where two or three drones were actually fired on him. But they found the characters they were out trained in Colombia. So this is a global situation, an old banana republic book. And we'll have that, incidentally, a clown government, I think we've called it, in Venezuela. We'll have that up today sometime on the situation there with President Medeiros. And he made his address at the Supreme Court building there. So far, the military, the leaders of the military, have endorsed his government. A lot of it falls upon that. I noticed there had been some criticism from some left-wing factions and what have you about the Sandinistas. Well, the Sandinistas is, excuse me, of the Bolivarians, the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. But the Bolivarians, that goes back to Salvador Simon Bolivar. We learned about him in elementary school. He at one time was not only the president of Venezuela, but of Ecuador and that whole area there. A great patriot of Latin America, and he had African ancestry. That's why we were talking about him. Thus, under Comandante Chavez, Hugo Chavez, he brought about a reintroduce the people of there in Venezuela to Simon Bolivar, and they call themselves the Bolivarians. Anyway, and they've had this government now for 20 years. They overthrew Comandante, and as I understand it, he didn't take his mobile phone away, and he was talking to Fidel, and he stayed and hung in there, and his comrades, Capilleros, broke him out of prison. So he was back again, and until he mysteriously got brain cancer and, of course, died in office. And now it is Comandante Munoz, a worker, as he said, a humble worker. He used to be a bus driver, a big man. And he was talking about at the Supreme Court of his visits to the U.S. and what states he knew, Manhattan, Washington. He drove around there, and his wife did the interpreting. She spent evidently 8 years in U.S. and is fluent in English. He is not fluent in English, but he understands some. So she's his interpreter. Anyway, that is the story out of Venezuela where it stands today. He has said he would dialogue with these people. The problem they've had in Venezuela, actually two problems. The economic violence caused by the U.S., these sanctions have been crippling. They can't get some of the necessary things that they need to get. They've caused inflation to be literally where you need a whole wheelbarrow full of currency, Venezuelan currency, they were literally showing it there, to buy something, because they officially use the dollar. And I think it's what it means, the one now, something like that. And this is the same situation they had in Zimbabwe. And, of course, the situation there was when they installed a new government there in Zimbabwe, now the same economic problems are still there. Under the quote-unquote new leader. So these economic problems do not necessarily go away until one leader leaves or the other. No doubt even the stock market in Caracas has went up because they want to see the capitalists get back in business there. Venezuela is one of the largest, or the largest, oil-producing nation in the country. But the reason they haven't been producing as much lately is getting spare parts for the oil fields, and a lot of people have left, a lot of sabotage has occurred. And how this thing plays off will be a lot on what Valverian revolutionaries do. They started with a National Guard. Many people have suggested that they arm the people, and that needs to be done, and how firm they can keep this thing going. We'll see. But one of the situations with any of these revolutionary situations that are not only revolutionary but evolutionary, that it does take some time. And many places, the Workers' Party in Brazil, for example, were in power for many, many years. Now they are out and the fascist has come in. They had a conservative prior to him, but didn't do anything about the economy. But the capitalists that are still in business prop some of these states up as long as they can stay in business. That is one of the big problems. Trump, while ranting and raving about what Nicolas Maduro is doing, he couldn't even get into Congress for his State of the Union. May is a disgrace there. Brexit has fallen apart. The UK economy has fallen apart. So she doesn't have much to, as they say, write home being in glass houses. Let's go now to the University of Virginia. And this is a kind of an interesting one here. Talking about the 2000 election. This is Larry Sabato's shop, and we've already honored Heber Heyer. This is the 2020 Electoral College. Why the Republicans' magic number is probably 269 and not 270. Kyle Klondike again here. Despite the Democratic takeover, Republicans still hold an edge if the House has to pick the president. Interesting. There's still at least one plausible Electoral College scenario that had produced a 269 would have thrown the presidential election to the House of Representatives elected in 2020. The House decides the presidency. You might think that the Democrats would have the advantage given a new majority, but the Republicans that hold are likely to maintain the advantage. The Republican presidential nominee has won a majority of Electoral College votes twice in 5 years. Five elections, excuse me. That was in 2000. But the 2000 election was stolen from Albert Gore of Tennessee. And 2016, yes, heading into 2020, it may be the Republican nominee could lose the popular vote and only tie in the Electoral College and still win the presidency. That's because the Republicans are likely to hold an edge in the process that would be used to resolve an Electoral College tie or other situations where none of the candidates secure the required majority to win the president outright. That's 270. Such a situation is certainly not likely, but it's not impossible. I will, no doubt about that. As we look ahead at 2020, the presidential race is a plausible Electoral College map where neither side is able to get the 270 electoral votes and needed for majority. Then the 269 is like this. They get the states here. 269 for Democrats, 269 for the Republicans, and the blue states we're looking at, California, Oregon, Nevada, and Washington State. Then we go out to Alaska, Arizona, I wouldn't bet on that one. Utah, Idaho, Wyoming, North, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, and the blue in between is Colorado and New Mexico. Then we go to Minnesota and Illinois. We got Wisconsin. That is wrong. Wisconsin, the Democrats, as it looks now, will carry Wisconsin in 2020. Iowa, I'm not certain about, but that could change also. And then we go down to Missouri. Hard to say. Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia. Hard to say in Georgia, too. South Carolina, yes. Florida, so-so. Indiana, Ohio. Ohio is a little bit different. We'll look and see. We'll go back and visit it later. Michigan, that's for the Democrats. Virginia, Pennsylvania, New York, Maine, Massachusetts, so forth and so on, Jersey, Delaware, etc., and Washington, D.C. And they have North Carolina here. Well, North Carolina and Georgia are two we'll be looking at, particularly at North Carolina, then South Carolina. These are Republican states. And Florida. Well, Florida, we can't. One of the problems we can't guard against is thievery. The current Secretary of State in Florida has resigned. We'll get to that before we do the sports. So, in the event, set aside the concept of faithless electors instead of folks. Anyway, the 2020 House election would pick the president, but in a way that benefits the Republicans, at least in as the House is currently composed. Each state delegate delegation gets a single vote for president. That means that California, with 53 delegates and a whopping 46-7 Democratic advantage, has the same power as Wyoming. That is a problem within itself. The Senate would select the vice president from each of the 100 members get a vote. Well, last time the House picked the president, that was in 1824. The House passed over Canada, who won the most electoral votes and popular votes, well, not a majority either. Andrew Jackson in favor of the Electoral College recipient there, Adams, and Secretary Crawford. The fourth place was the Speaker Henry Clay, remember him, in consideration, but Adams, who later named Clay Secretary of State, and Jackson supporters decried a corrupt bargain between Adams and Clay. Henry Clay called a great compromiser. Women expect members of the delegation majority party to support their nominee, thus welding control of the delegation votes in favor of their party. But this doesn't have to happen. 4 years ago, in 2014, we found a clear GOP edge amongst the 50 states. In the House delegations, the Republicans controlled 33 of 50 delegations after the election, in which they won 247 House seats. Even though the Democrats won a solid 235 to 199, that was in November, and there's one district not resolved yet. The Republicans control a majority of seats in 46 House delegations. Democrats are 22. They're split right down the middle. There are two split states, just happen to be the most competitive. If only two states that flipped from red to blue under the Electoral College last scenario were the above, Michigan 7-7 tie, and Pennsylvania 9-9 tie. Technically, Pennsylvania delegation is now 9-8 Democrats with the resignation of Tom Marino. But the time being, we're going to assume that the Republicans would hold that seat, which Trump carried by 36 points in a special election that will be held later this year. And this is map 2, current House controlled by delegates here. Well, if we look at how these tabulations turn out, they obviously don't fit states like California that has 53. One could argue that the GOP's edge largely comes from smaller states. The GOP holds a 5-2 edge among seven states that only have a single at-large House member. However, the edge disappears if one looks instead of a dozen states that have either one or two House members. Delegates control is split 6-6 amongst those states. That said, the GOP definitely benefits from a broader small state advantage. Its four delegates' national edge comes entirely from a bare majority of states, 26 that have six House members or less. So you're seeing the advantages of these very, very small states that still keep the Republicans in control. The lone state, states that do not are Arizona, increasingly purple, a state that voted for Trump by 3.5 points in 2016. But where Democrats won 6-5 in the House edge, Arizona is flipping, at least the way our models see it, and we at this mic see it. Arizona, and again, this is very difficult to tell because we in 2019, we don't know who the Republican candidate will be. We don't know how much damage at this point in time the government shutdown will do, or the economy in 2020. Many people are talking about the recession of sometime in 2019. Some people see that recession coming in Q2, more probably in Q3, but it could come more quickly. And things in economics do tend to move quicker than slower. But to benefit the Democrats, they need to get a recession in Q4 of this year and last into 2020. That would benefit them. Now, that's the economic part of the pie, but we don't know. There could be a running war in Venezuela. There could be a war in the South China Seas. It's very unpredictable. Would there be an impeachment? More doubtful at this point in time. I see if that anything of that occurred with DJ Trump, it would be more of a resignation than an impeachment. Prolonged impeachment proceeding is something they don't know. No. The newly released 2020 House ratings show that the Democrats have a plausible House targets in each state. If they do, well, yeah, it could change. A lot of this depends on what we've termed in other broadcasts, side issues. There could be side issues. What we know, such a situation would be unprecedented in modern times. Realistically, though, it's hard to imagine Democrats taking a majority of House delegates in the next election, unless the overall election was a Democratic runaway. Well, not exactly. Which there wouldn't be much in the Electoral College to worry about. On the other hand, the GOP may still end up solidifying their majority control of the House delegates. Tie Michigan or Pennsylvania could even flip their way. A Republican have viable targets in each state. Additionally, the GOP could force ties in states like Maine and New Hampshire. That's a little bit different because Maine, I think Maine has ranked choice now. New Hampshire, a little more difficult to say there. These are pretty hypotheticals here, but to be clear, we aren't likely to see a 269-269 tie. If we did, the GOP would remain likely to hold an advantage in such an extraordinary position. Yeah, that is a little bit, I won't say this irresponsible of the crystal ball, but it's interesting. That's all we can say. There, it is interesting. I think we, we did Venezuela. The Post says there, the end of Venezuela's nightmare in sight. No, it's the beginning of Venezuela's nightmare here. No matter what happens to Nicolas Maduro, because basically the Bolivarians are there, and they will remain a party there. He had a news conference down there with the Socialist Party. And this is where some of the left-wing factions get a little bit confused. Won't get into that here. But you can just read their statements for what they are or not. That doesn't work out that way. Very, very difficult to stay ahead of a ball, so to speak. Let me just make sure. Risks lie ahead, pinning hopes on the opposition. Well, the problem there is this shot out of the nowhere with this, what is his name? Trying to get his first name here. He is a leader of from an ultra-right wing party that declared himself John Bolton. He's been around forever. President actually swore himself in. That That's very unusual. Usually countries don't recognize people until they literally are in the presidential palace. I've heard of characters in the case of Haiti, they're recognizing people. But nonetheless, there is a controlled oil revenue, $20 million in humanitarian aid that Mike Pompeo promised on Tuesday would go to, what's his name, Jose Godillo. I had his name pronounced. Well, we'll get it when we do Be Our Own the World. We'll get his name pronounced correctly eventually here. Now, this is back to the Panamanian situation. Security forces killed a U.S. military official at a roadblock. That was a scam, and President Bush at the time, not G.W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, sent 10,000 troops in there, and the President Noriega was soon captured, and he died recently in France. That was about it. But again, they do have an oil company here called Citgo. I've used it before in the U.S. They have refineries here. I suppose they could take those over and give those to him. Democrats praise the decision, too. And see, this is one of the big problems. Standing with the people of Venezuela stands for freedom. This is what Lindsey Graham said. Many Democrats praise the decision, too. They include this Adam Schiff. Now, he's one of these characters from California that is a right-winger. Call it appropriate action. And this is where this is just so typical old school Wilsonian foreign policy, no doubt about that. And this is where the way the Democrats, Richard Durbin saying the U.S. should not, well, wait a minute here, should not anoint leaders of the opposition in Venezuela during an internal polarized conflict. That's correct if he said that. But this so-called liberal in Canada, Justin Trudeau, whose relationship with Trump's not very good. And this whole thing, Bolton, when asked how his response here is different than it is to other so-called totalitarian leaders, Bolton added, is different from that towards many of authoritarian and rejected the premise. The fact is Venezuela is in our hemisphere, he said, and I think we have a special responsibility. And the Venezuelans just responded to this in simple terms. Yankee, go home. Let me see if I can do him tomorrow. Incidentally, we'll tomorrow on the week that was. We have Jamel Bowie, who used to be with CBS. I'm not sure what's happening. I'll have to check this out. But now he's with the New York Times. We're no longer seeing him on Face the Nation. CBS had done an interesting thing there. Our friend Alexander talked about CBS and how they were going to cover the 2020 race, excluding African Americans. We have to watch this very, very carefully to see what's going on. We talked about the Florida. Well, Florida no longer has a Secretary of State now. Somewhere we had his little photo up here. And if you look up on, yeah, here we are. Florida Secretary of State, the blackface photo. This just showed you what was going on in Florida there. The big on every corner. This is Michael Ertel, the Republican who served as Florida Secretary of State for 2 weeks and 2 days. The Tallahassee Democrat, this is the Times, we're a Tallahassee Democrat. Ertel is wearing a red lipstick, earrings, and a New Orleans Saints bandana. We're taking 2 months after, they were taking 2 months after Katrina. A city there, the photo, Tallahassee Democrat shows, they showed it to the governor. The newspaper said it showed the photo of Ertel last week and sent them to, was shown it and sent them to the governor DeSantis' office, which quickly said he had accepted his resignation. In other words, he had to go in a hurry because DeSantis himself had been called out as a bigot. Evidently, Senator Nelson, the Democrat incumbent, conceded to DeSantis, and of course, Gillum. Incidentally, Gillum also endorses the renegade government in Venezuela. This Gillum, I've always suspected, he, of course, Gillum, that is, supported the infamous